Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday, and this is Pause IM Radio. We're excited to be on the air and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for today's program are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. We'll be taking your calls and speaking with our featured member of the week. We encourage all of our listeners to phone in and share some of your life experiences. The number to call is 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause IM Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pause IM Radio. My name is Robert. I am your host. I'm joined by Jeremy Dunn. Jeremy, how are you, man?
I'm doing well.
Happy Sunday, right?
Oh, gosh. What a crazy weekend. It's just been busy.
Yeah, right. I just want to let everyone know, who maybe you're tuning in for the first time, the Pause IM Radio is a radio show, you know, talking about HIV and AIDS, sharing stories with people throughout the Pause IM community. I just wanted to get that out there for some new callers because not everybody is familiar with it. Jeremy is from PositivelySpeaking.com, and you can find out about me at PauseIM.com. I just kind of wanted to throw that out there in the beginning so we don't have to feel rushed to do it at the end.
Rush.
Right. But let's see what's going on. Today's show is going to be about anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts after
uplifting.
Yeah, after a HIV diagnosis. And I know last week we were talking about World AIDS Day, you know, and I went to an event in Philly, which was very, very interesting because it's the third year they had it. And I went last year, and last year I just went as somebody who was just, you know, attending the event, where this year I went and actually had a table. And Linda, the member of the month, came down and she drove me down, actually. And we had made the little sign and put them on the table and handed out flyers. And she went and got tested for free. You know, it was just kind of a cool thing to do with Linda. You know what I mean? It was very, very cool of her to volunteer and come down and do that with me. And there was like, yeah, it was very nice of her to volunteer that. But it was really cool. We had a little sign put together, and I put a picture of it on the site if anybody wants to check it out. But it was interesting. They had a lot of interesting groups were there. The one group that I wanted to mention, you can go to their website at www.y/hep.org, and they're actually a young hip-hop group based out of Philly, and they actually stand for the Youth Health Empowerment Project, and they go around teaching people about safe practices and safe sex and, you know, HIV and AIDS awareness through hip-hop dancing. And I just thought it was very inspiring to see young kids, because they're people from the age of 13 to 24, go out there with a message like that. It's pretty powerful for you know, the young people to do that.
That is very cool.
I thought it was kind of cool. And then they had, of course, the Mayor Nutter came and spoke for a couple minutes. We had the Gay Men's Chorus was there, which was very, very interesting. And then there was this, I want to say they were the Bright Hope Baptist Celestial Choir. And they had me moving in the seats like I was at Sister Act. It was awesome. It was really, really cool. Yeah, and then there was another group. It's called Smoke Lilies and Jade. And they are also a dance choreographed dance group that, you know, does a lot of instrumental music. It's very powerful stories that they do. It's like kind of like acting and dancing. I don't know what there's a certain thing for that, but it's very empowering what they did. And I just want to thank the Philly AIDS Fund for letting me be a part of it, because last minute I was able to snag a table and set it up. So that was kind of very interesting. I heard you worked a lot, huh?
Yeah, I had to work late, so I wasn't able to get to any of the events. That's what happens when you're a corporate America.
Yeah, you were with us in spirit, right?
I wore my red ribbon, this week was, it's year end, and so, you know, we're just kind of moving in a grooving at the office, but that's life in the financial world.
Well, that's interesting. The one thing I didn't mention last week, which I could have kicked myself after I was done, but my niece's birthday is actually December 1st on World AIDS Day, and she's my goddaughter, and I kind of thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, her birthday falls on World AIDS Day, and her uncle, you know, is HIV positive, and is trying to do. You know what I mean? It's just, it was kind of interesting how it all kind of rolls about. Like, does she really know how important her birthday, what her birthday really, you know, is? But she's only 11, so it's kind of hard. You know what I mean? But I bought her some of the Gap Red stuff, you know what I mean, to kind of sort of educate her. But I don't tell, you know what I mean? I don't really, she's 11, so I don't really tell her. But I go, you know, just wear this, and it helps people, you know, in different countries and who are sick. And she understands, and, you know, it's very interesting to see that. I just thought it was very, very weird that all that happened and, you know, that she was born on that day. But we went to her house last night and had a little birthday party for her. So it was kind of cool.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, it's always good to
see
family. Well,
did she get a pony?
No, she didn't get a pony. She was 11. You know what she had told me? She wanted a laptop. She wanted a laptop and a Sidekick. I said, you're 11 years old. I didn't get my laptop until I was 28. I was like, are you kidding me? You really think you're going to get a laptop from me?
Yeah, they don't want ponies anymore, do they?
No, they don't. Laptop, Sidekick, and she's 11 years old and on that AIM or whatever that is. AIM or something. Instant messaging people.
That would be AOL, instant messaging?
No. And I think it's called AIM, isn't it?
AIM, yeah.
AIM, yeah, she's on AIM. That's what AIM. She's on all the time.
AOL, yeah. Instant messaging, yeah.
Oh, well, I don't have AOL, so I don't know.
Funny.
Oh, my.
Oh, goodness, yeah, it is just, you know, I was looking through the news and just looking at some of the stories, and it's actually been a fairly quiet week, but there's a couple of interesting things. In India, the headline, and I have to read this headline to you. It says, homosexuality needs to be curbed as it spreads HIV/AIDS. That's the headline. And this is coming out of the Times of India.
Now read that one more time for me, that headline.
Okay, homosexuality needs to be curbed as it spreads HIV/AIDS.
Okay.
They are trying to what are they trying to do? Right now in India, it's illegal. It's an offense in the country, and you can be punished to life in prison for engaging in homosexual behavior. And they're trying, they're really pinning gay men as the spread, as the cause and the spread of HIV over there. So this is a story out of New Delhi, and it's really to justify the criminalization of homosexuality in the country. So that's there's two issues there, right? So they're, you know, trying to, they're saying that homosexuality is bad, and you know, that homosexuals are spreading and causing AIDS. So that was one of the stories that came out.
Now, one thing that I found interesting about that, because now, see, I didn't read that, but now that you say that to me, wasn't the prince in India, wasn't there a big story about this guy who, the prince of, like, you know, the head of whoever, the king and queen, I don't even know if that's what they call him in India, but, like, he was the prince and he was going to take over the throne, and he came out of the closet. I could have sworn it was on Oprah.
Yeah, he did. That was a while ago.
Well, but it makes me wonder, you know what I mean, are they going to arrest him?
I don't
know.
Because he's
open about it, and I know he does some activism out there now.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, but you remember the story.
Oh, yeah, because I read it in Out magazine.
Right.
But, yeah, I'll have to look it up and report back on it.
That's cool.
And let's see. What else is going on? Two stories that came that are talking about the same thing. The Nobel Prize laureate, what's his name? Luc Montagnier, if I can pronounce his name. He's a Nobel Prize winner, and he's claiming that an HIV vaccine is likely to be developed and to expect it within 5 years. So that's an interesting.
Well, that sounds good.
It sounds good, but we don't know. You know, don't know what that means. I think he announced that today while they were in China. So that's another piece of the news. What else? What else? What else? What else? But it's just been pretty quiet.
Yeah. Well, hey, that sounds good to me. You know what I mean? No, that was, they were both very interesting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But, it's been a quiet news week, really. And, you know, speaking of World AIDS Day, just kind of bring it back a little bit. Uh-huh. I didn't see much press about World AIDS Day. I saw, especially here on the news, you know, I'd be flipping through the channels, and I didn't see much.
And you know what? I can totally agree with you, Jeremy. We never get the newspaper here in the area, our local newspaper, and it came on December 1st. For some reason, it was in our driveway, and I went through the whole paper. Not one mention of World AIDS Day at all. I watched the news at night, and not one mention of the World AIDS Day event that happened in Philadelphia. Nothing. The mayor was even there, and they featured the mayor at another event, not even at that event.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. I was so surprised by it.
Yep.
I was going to write it, a news station.
it's interesting to see how little coverage it does get. It just goes to show you that we need to be far more vocal out there.
Yeah.
Get out there. Talk out, you know, speak out, act up, fight AIDS, woo.
You know, and the thing that makes me mad is, like, I will write, like, those newspapers and those reporters to do, like, stories maybe on the website and things like that, and I never get a response back for them. And I send it, like, before, like, maybe you're looking for something to do for World AIDS Day, you know what I mean? And I send it to them maybe, like, twice, and nothing do I ever get back except for the auto reply. It's very interesting how they're, like, not interested in even covering it.
Mm-hmm.
We've only been doing it for 3 years. The event in Philly's only been going on for 3 years. Do you think it would have coverage?
And it's just in tonight's topic, you know, about depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, all of that. If we're not talking about it, if we're not, you know, getting out there and being in front of it, then it kind of adds to all of those feelings.
Absolutely. When I was at the event on World AIDS Day down in Philly, the one thing that the mayor, because I went up and when the mayor was there, I was like, I have to go see the mayor. You know, I've never actually, like, saw him in person, so whatever. And I went there, and then he was in the church, and he was telling us, and he goes, Philadelphia our new infection rate in Philadelphia is 10 times the country's rate, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Is 10 times. You know what I mean? I was, like, blown away by it. I was so surprised.
Yeah, and it's just people are being, it's underreported. It's depending on the groups, you know, it's depressing when you go back and you look at all of the statistics and whatnot. It's obvious that we are not, and I mean the global we, you know.
Right.
Everybody across this country, we Americans, just aren't doing enough. We've become complacent in all of this, and we have to be responsible for each of us. You know, each of us has to take responsibility and accountability, get out there and talk about it. We can't be afraid to talk about it. And the more we talk about it, the more accepted, you know, intolerant people will become of HIV-positive people. And that will help break down, that will help improve, you know, people's bouts with depression and anxiety. Because, you know, getting this diagnosis isn't easy. And I think you're referring to the book First Year in HIV and how he, the author, takes you through some of those points of, you know, when you first diagnosed, you know, there's all these emotions that get churned up, and part of it is that depression. You know, I know I got depressed. I've always had anxiety, so, you know, the depression just feeds anxiety.
Right.
I've never had the suicidal thoughts, though, really. But other people have.
Right.
You know, it's a devastating diagnosis.
Right. Well, starting with, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but just starting with anxiety, because I want to try to break it down into all three separate things individually, since I kind of have it mapped out like that. Anxiety itself is not an easy thing to define. The way that they define it in this book is it is a disturbance of your mood or emotional tone. It can start as a sense of worry, stress, or nervousness about an anticipated event or outcome. So the likelihood of developing anxiety probably involves life experiences, your psychological makeup, or your genetic factors. Interesting is men tend to experience more anxiety than women, and it's not clear why exactly they do. Now, mild to moderate anxiety is very common. Symptoms may include excessive worrying, agitation, shakiness, irritability, feeling on edge or hyper, muscle tension, difficulty concentrating or falling asleep, having changes in your appetites, and after you test it, you know, positive, it's a major event in your life. And this is when this anxiety sometimes come in, because you're so worried about the outcome of what's going to happen now that I have this, because it's, you know what I mean, it's like it's unknown. Everybody takes different worries about this. And you said you did experience some anxiety, didn't you?
Well, I still do.
Right.
I've always had anxiety. So having HIV just adds to it. And for anybody who's experienced anxiety, people experience anxiety over, you know, paying the bills. They, you know, experience anxiety making the rent. You know, there's lots of big things that cause people to be anxious. There's also the little things that cause you to be anxious. You know, did I turn the iron off? Did I, you know, put the coffee pot away? Did I, you know, there's all of the little stuff. Then you add in to that, you sprinkle in HIV, and that can explode the little things into much larger things. I can tell you that I had the sweaty palms. You know, I would break it out in a cold sweat. Now, the HIV medicines that I'm on, I take the one pill a day, the Atripla.
Right.
And it has the Efavirenz, which is the brand name Sustiva. And that particular drug crosses the blood-brain barrier, okay? And
right.
It can cause, or it can intensify the feelings of anxiety that you already had. And this particular drug can also intensify, you know, you read the label on any of these drugs and, you know, it lists it all up, but because it crossed the blood-brain barrier, it can intensify that. So it gets into your nervous system, and you have whacked out dreams, which is kind of cool sometimes. But but so I'm taking in anti-anxiety medicine on top of it to keep calm, to stay, you know, even. So, because, you know, if you, the HIV diagnosis brings along, you know, not just, you know, just the anxieties and the anxiousness of God, am I going to be able to afford medicines? Am I going to be able to afford health care? You know, on top of everything else. How are people going to perceive me? How, you know, it just, it does. It can churn those feelings over and over and up and just cranks up the heat, if you will.
And, right, well, I found this real quick. I just want to tell you about this report real quick. Reports have confirmed that increased anxiety, which is anxiety that often lasts up to several months, are common in the course of living with HIV. However, specific anxiety disorders appear to be no more common in people with HIV than in the general population, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, you know, all that report is saying is that, you know, just because you have HIV doesn't make you more likely to experience a chronic form of anxiety than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because HIV is not a neurological or an emotional illness like anxiety is, or that depression is. It's how we deal with HIV on a daily basis is how it will affect our depression, or how it affects our anxiety, you know, in our emotional well-being. So it doesn't cause it, but it certainly doesn't help it either.
Right. There's actually three types of anxiety disorders, and I just want to go over them real quick and explain a little bit about them. One is the generalized anxiety disorder, which is more than likely excessive or unrealistic worries, always feeling like something bad is going to happen. You have, and most people with this have difficulty concentrating on their daily tasks because they're constantly concerned about something else. I know I've had sometimes anxiety about that. You know what I mean? Where you're always worried about something bad going to happen to you. Because you feel like, especially, you know, when you're going through life and one thing after another is happening to you, and then finally you get your HIV diagnosis and, like, that's the straw that breaks the camel's look back, kind of, and you're just like, what else is going to happen? The next one is a panic disorder. And a panic disorder is when you feel unexpected and repeated episodes of intense fear by physical symptoms such as a heart beating, beginning to race, chest pain, shortness of breath, nausea, numbness, you know, things like that, kind of like a panic attack. I know I have a friend who has these panic attacks and she takes meds for it. And the last one is a post-traumatic stress disorder, which is usually happens after a terrifying event causing repeated frightening thoughts and memories. And let me see this. One recent study of diverse women found up to 42% of women who sought treatment for HIV met the criteria for this disorder.
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, some in panic attacks and, you know, anxiety and depression, it's all, I think they're all interrelated.
Oh, for sure.
Frankly. You know, anxiety breeds panic. Panic breeds, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's a culmination of all that emotional baggage. And sometimes we will focus in on the HIV portion of it. And we'll blame everything on the HIV, where, you know, if you can tell, I've had, you know, plenty of therapy, but if we take a step back and we look at the whole picture, you know, there's a lot that, you know, that makes all that stuff boil to the surface. So, you know, HIV just being a part of it. But there's everybody, you know, who's HIV positive, not every HIV positive goes into deep depression. Not everybody who's HIV positive goes you know, experience anxiety or panic attacks or you know, or any of that, all of that stuff that can go along with it. You know, some folks, you know, adjust pretty quickly. It's difficult to say, you know, it's not an easy thing sometimes to cope with, but we all, that is why, you know, we have to have a support structure around us, a safe and stable support structure.
Right.
So that's what we need. You know, and or that's what everybody needs, regardless of your HIV status. But we all need that, you know.
Right, and as Jeremy was saying, it's normal for somebody with HIV to worry, and you know what I mean. And who could not worry about it as soon as your diagnosis? You know, you have the fear of the unknown, where you don't know what's going to happen, and the unpredictable nature of HIV, you know what I mean? When your blood test comes back, you know, you may be feeling, you know, great and everything's good, but when your blood tests are down, you're feeling really depressed and things like that. You know what I mean? That's a normal way of people act like this. This is normal fear of stigma, you know, fear of being labeled or, you know, criticized for having HIV. Being a hypochondriac, somebody who is obsessed about every little thing on their body, what's this, what's that. You know, some people are like that, and that's a form of anxiety. And the pressure is to feel like you always have to have a good mood. You always have to be in a good mood, because a lot of people feel that they are pressured into being optimistic all the time, and that's normal, I think.
And, you know, for people to expect if you expect to be happy all the time, you won't be. I mean, it's a fact of life that, you know, you're going to be sad sometimes, you're going to be up, you're going to be down. So it's important to go through those things, but it's also very important to have somebody to be there with you, to pick you up when you need it. But, you know, as much as I love therapy, I do, you still have to do a lot. You have to do the work. You can't just rely on someone to fix it for you. You have to work at it to solve it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. See, I can't. See, you do go to therapy. That's something I couldn't do. When I had a case manager when I was first diagnosed to get myself situated, they tried to set me up with somebody to talk to, a counselor. And they set me up with this straight guy who would talk about his wife. And I just felt very uncomfortable. And I could never open up to somebody one-on-one. And I think that's why, you know, I made the PosIAM community, because it's so much easier for me to open up to people who are like me. You know what I mean?
I do.
It's just weird. I can't open up to somebody like that. I get weird.
You know, and choosing the right therapist is key, because you build a relationship with that person that you don't have with other people. They are a third party. They are supposed to be objective, you know. So it's important to find someone that you're comfortable with, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So and you're not going to be comfortable with everyone. So and sometimes finding a therapist takes time. You
it's
know,
like finding
I
a doctor.
I think I went through three before I found the one that I have now that I love. Love her. Love Robin. Robin, if you're listening, I love you. But I see her once a month, you know, and that's perfect for me. Because I'm able to check in and I'm able to continue working on things that I need to work on. And depending on how much, you know, it's kind of like a car, you know, when you're working on a car, how much work it needs is how often you go. You know, I know some people that go 4 or 5 times a week. I know some people that go maybe twice a year. It depends on, you know, it really does depend. And it also, you know, it's, and sometimes therapy isn't the only answer. Sometimes you have to go on medication to help with depression, to help with the anxiety, to help with the panic attacks, to help, you know, it's sometimes you have to use both, you know,
right.
Sometimes and it's important to know when to find, you know, and when to talk to your doctor about things like that.
Right. Well, the next topic is, well, we kind of flew into it a little bit, is depression. And depression is more than just feeling sad. A lot of people associate depression and they think, you know, oh, well, they're depressed, they're sad. And although people often, you know, use the term to describe sadness or the blues, it's actually short-lived, unhappy feelings that occur in response to a particular event. They generally fade with time or as an event resolves or improves. Depression is about twice as common in women as in men, which is kind of interesting. And about 1 in 10 Americans experiences chronic depression, while the rates for people with HIV are estimated at about 1 in 3, making it the most common disorder among people with HIV.
Is it the most common? Now, see, this is where I have a bit of a difference of opinion with the author.
That's what the show is all about.
Is it the most common disorder? Is it the most commonly diagnosed disorder?
Right, right.
There's a lot of doctors out there who say, "Oh, well, you're depressed," or who will say, "Oh, no, you're not depressed," and when you really are, and it's misdiagnosed all the time. Just because, you know, to be honest with you, just because I'm feeling down today does not mean that I'm overly or chronically depressed. And obviously, I just want to go out there on the record and tell everybody again, I am not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a therapist, I'm none of those things, I'm not a doctor, I'm none of those things. But I have gotten to a point where I know when I'm starting to feel that depression, when I feel depression coming on, because I've been there where you don't want, where I don't want to open the windows. I just want to sleep all day. I don't, you know, it's just, it hurts. Depression hurts. And it can physically manifest itself. It does. It's icky. You know, that's the word I have for it. It's, you just feel ick. It's for some folks, I know for some people, it's really hard to pull out of that. And it's, you know, emotional well-being is as important as your physical well-being. you know, because you have to, your emotional well-being is so important, because, you know, you want to be, what am I trying to say here? You need to take care of yourself in order to be physically healthy too.
All the way around.
Exactly.
Emotionally, physically, spiritually, it's like a, you know, a big circle.
It is. Whether you are a spiritual person or not, whether you believe in God or not, you know, it's whatever you. Okay, so I'm going to steal your line, Rob. Finding your comfort zone, and that's really what it is. You know, it's trying to, you know, and we as a human, we as Homo sapiens, as a species, humans as a species, we evolve every day emotionally, and we grow every day. So it's important to recognize all of that. And one other very, very important thing that we have to mention is that if you start feeling anxious and you start feeling panicky and you start feeling depressed and you start feeling these things that you normally haven't felt before, it's okay to ask for help. There's no shame in that. And that's so, so very important, because we all need that helping hand, and it's okay to ask for the help.
You always got to ask for help. I know, and it's hard. You know what I mean? It's very difficult to ask for help because you feel like nobody understands. You know what I mean? And that's what the Paz I Am community is for—to find people who relate.
You know, is it? You bring up an interesting. You said something very interesting. It's mm-hmm. that nobody understands. I would go a little bit further than that. I would think that it's not that nobody would understand. But for me, it wasn't the understanding part of any of that. It was the, I'm embarrassed to ask for it. I'm embarrassed because I'm not a weak person. And when I asked for help, it came across as I felt I was being weak. And, you know, it's like, oh, no, you always have to be strong. You always have to be up. You always have to be. But I wasn't. And so that it's very important that it was okay to ask for help. And you're not being weak at all when you do.
Right. Now, I know when I was going through the depression stages, you know, after my diagnosis, there were certain things that I did to try to get myself out of the depression stage, and one of them is I would listen to like music, certain songs. I would find certain people, like I'm a big fan of like Alanis Morissette, and I would put on her CD and put on my headphones and just crank the music and literally sit there and listen to her music and write poetry. I mean, that was something that I did to try to get out of the depression, and it seemed to help, because it's just putting down my feelings, you know, whether I'm not saying it, because sometimes it's just too hard to say. Just writing it down on paper made me like feel so much better, like a ton came off my shoulders just getting it out, even if it's just writing it down. You know, that
yep.
was one big thing that helped me get through my depression.
And that's a form of therapy.
Right.
You know, it's therapeutic. It's catharsis. It's good to get that stuff out, because if you hold it in, you harbor it, it begins to fester like a wound. And what happens when a wound festers? It gets gangrenous, it gets gross, you know, it becomes infected, it's, you know, it's not good. So it's good to get that stuff out, to let it out, and it's okay. Because depression can be deadly. And I think this goes into the next topic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
See, look at that segue right there. Because right. It can be deadly.
And talking about suicidal thoughts, thinking about it is somewhat normal. Planning your suicide is not normal. And that's when you know, if you're thinking about it, like, I mean, I've thought about it. I've gone through, you know, situations like, can it get any worse? Can I just end it? Will it be easier for me just to take it and you know, and start over if that's what I believe in? But actually planning it out, that's when you need to worry and ask for help. I think this was a research done in France, and they recently discovered that among HIV-positive people who had a good response from HIV treatment, 1 in 10 committed suicide. These were people with high T cells and low viral loads.
Say that again.
They said that among the HIV-positive people who had a good response from HIV treatment, 1 in 10 committed suicide. These are people with high T cells and low viral loads.
What does that have to do with the price of milk in China?
Right?
I'm sorry, but, you know, that means nothing, you know. That means absolutely nothing. Just because you have a high T cell count and low viral load and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's depression. Depression doesn't cause, you know, one or the other. I mean, it's depression. Clinically depressed people, and I think there's a definition for this, but clinically depressed people will carry out with it. You know, suicide is such a final, you know, just it's so final. It's where someone just doesn't know that there is help. You know, it's as if they don't understand that that there is help out there.
Right, and if anyone is out there thinking about suicide, I do have a suicide hotline to call, and the number is 1-800-784-2433. It's very scary because I don't know anybody personally who has committed suicide, but my partner, one of his friends growing up has, and it's one of those things where I believe he was drunk or whatever, or intoxicated. And it's at times that is when all the thoughts go through and you're, you know, in another world because you're either high or drunk. And it sounds like a really good idea. But when it's all done, you're left in a chaotic state and you don't even know what's going on. You know, it's just try to get help. It's very important. You might not believe it now, but relief is possible if you are having these thoughts. It might not come in the form of talking to another person or taking medicine or believing in something spiritual. But if you're not receptive to the idea of that things can get better, you'll have a harder time finding help. So again, you can call the suicide hotline at 1-800-784-2433.
And I think I also saw a study or a report a few years ago that said that most people, or what was it? It was the majority of people that attempted suicide did it out of looking for help. And attempted meaning that they didn't carry through with it. Right?
Right.
So they attempted it because it is a cry for help. It's an extreme cry for help. But they also said that the ones who do it don't usually talk about it. It's or something like that. And I have to find that report. But it was an interesting report because they said if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. And somebody said in the chat room here, they said that, you know, and I have to agree, that suicide is a permanent solution for a temporary, you know, problem.
It's very selfish.
I don't know if it is or not. You know, is it selfish? Or do we look at it as being selfish?
I think it is a little bit. I mean, if you think about all the people you leave behind, it is kind of a selfish act.
But we all leave people behind.
Right.
In some way or another.
True.
You know, we look at it because, again, humans, the species that we're a communal species. We herd together. We live in packs. We need other people around us. In general, and suicide is just a bad deal all the way around for everybody, if you ask me. We got to go through and, you know, and show people that, you know, just because you're HIV positive isn't the end. It's not the end.
It's very true. Life doesn't end with a diagnosis of any disease. And, you know, there's thousands of people that, you know, live with this disease every day and are living a productive life, you know, and appreciate it for the most part. If you're out there listening and you'd like to call in and share your story, please call at 347-215-9442. We'd like to fit you in before the end of the show. I don't know, I'm trying to think of some other things that they recommend for people who are going through depression is meditation. I personally cannot meditate because I can't sit still for a long period of time. but meditation is something that, you know, allows people to get out of that, or yoga. Yoga is a big thing that's going on that people are starting to do a lot more now, yoga and Pilates and things like that. And they're things that they say, you know, can kind of help you get out of your depression or any kind of, you know, bad thoughts that you may have. Have you ever done anything like that, like yoga?
Not yet. Yoga scares me.
It scares you?
It scares me to death. I'm afraid I'm going to get into one of those positions and not get out of it.
Yeah, my partner wants to do it, but I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'll have to try it.
You know, I hear such good things about it. I've actually been wanting to try it because yoga, you know, not only does it help you find your emotional center, but it helps you, you know, get strong and limber and all that stuff.
Yeah, right. Look at Madonna.
Well, Madonna, you know, she's a freak of nature.
Oh, that's funny. So I can bring up some, let's see here, while we're waiting for someone to call in. Or,
well, it's the book that you're reading out of, The First Year with HIV.
Yes, it's actually featured on the page, if I believe, above the chat.
What's that?
There should be on the radio show page where you're listening at, above the chat, there should be the book up there flashing.
Yeah.
Okay. Just for people who are listening.
You know, he's trying to write to all instances, right? He's trying to write to all audiences.
Right.
We just need to be very, very clear, and I'm going to throw the disclaimer out there that not everybody experiences these things.
Right.
Because you can have depression and anxiety without having HIV. I think I said that either also, but and vice versa, you can be HIV positive and not have the anxiety, the depression, and all that. One thing that you did gloss over a little bit that we didn't really touch on is post-traumatic stress disorder. You see that a lot with the folks that come back, you know, from war. They see something, you know, you see people blowing up in front of you, you know, that's traumatic. That's heavy stuff. I would be interested to know what the instances of PTSD is among people with HIV. You know, that just seems to me that, you know, I could imagine, you know, one who is, you know, if you were raped and then you were, you know, contracted HIV or abused or you know, that kind of thing would make sense to me. But I would be an interesting number.
Yeah, maybe I'll look that up for the next show.
Yeah, because you know it just goes back to, I think, everything that we've been talking about over all of these weeks when we do the show, is how important it is to have someone to talk with, have someone to relate to know that you're not alone in this big scary world. Because there's a lot that, you know, there's a lot of factors and a lot of things coming in at us from all directions, and HIV just happens to be one of them, right?
Right.
So, you know, we're all worried about the economy. We're all worried about oil. We're all worried about all kinds of things, and HIV just being a part of that.
Right.
You know?
We go through a lot of, you know, life challenges, if you want to call it, or experiences, or, you know, certain things, and depression is and anxiety are all things that, as human beings, we all kind of go through. And like you said before, the HIV, on top of it, just seems to be another rain cloud, so to say. But, you know,
I was going to say, I think it's an amplifier. I think it amplifies.
Right. Well, kind of like times 10. You
right.
know what I mean? And I just want to let people know that there is, you know, hope. The days do get brighter out there. Not every day is going to be a gloomy day where you're not going to want to get out of bed and you hate yourself. One of these days you're going to wake up and you're just going to be okay with yourself and slowly start to love yourself more. And, you know, and you have to just do this by trying to find who you are by doing certain things and reaching out to people. And you can do that in the Pause I Am community. You can do it by calling into the radio show. That's what me and Jeremy do this for. You know, we want to connect to help other people out there who are going through, you know, similar situations. It's a difficult world, but you're not alone for sure.
and you know, it's okay. I mean, whatever you're feeling right now is okay. It really is. It's, oh God, am I going to say this? I'm okay, you're okay.
Right.
It's, I there's so much that we need to, address, you know, it's the stigma that affects a lot of us, you know, because the stigma is just, it hurts. It hurts so bad sometimes, because you'll hear someone at, like, you know, you'll be at the grocery store and you'll hear someone say, you know, it's like, oh, AIDS, you know, or you know, they'll say some disparaging remark about somebody with HIV or with AIDS. And it's such a stigmatizing disease. And that can fuel depression. And so if you're depressed already and all of this is being amplified, do you turn and confront that person in the grocery store? Or do you ignore it and don't call them on it and just, or what do you do? You know, it's
I call them on it.
You know, I do too.
Now I would.
Yeah, you know, but it depends on where you're at emotionally, right? It depends
That's
on what.
So I said now I would. The person I am today, I would.
Right. Yep.
But not when I was first diagnosed.
Right. No, I mean, and it's a hard thing to work through.
Yes, it is. We're down to our last 2 minutes, so I just want to thank everybody for listening in. Just I wanted to go over some things that are going on in the site right now. We had 21 new members join this since the last show, which is very, very cool that we've gotten a lot more members within a week, so I'm kind of excited about that. And I also want to, again, thank Linda for coming down at the World AIDS Day event. I also want to let everybody know that next week I am hoping to have Linda on the show, as you know, our featured December member, and have a little discussion with her since she is an affected member, so people can get a sense of how she views everything as, you know, somebody outside looking in, which I think is very interesting to have. I wanted to also remind everybody that the Paz I Am Book Club is going to start in January, and the book is up top. Floating next to it is The Naked Truth by Marvin Brown. Put it on your Christmas list, and you can get it for the beginning of the year. And, Jeremy, you want to give a shot to your website real quick?
PositivelySpeaking.com. That's P-O-Z, PositivelySpeaking.com. I try to keep up with a blog out there. I've got some videos and stuff posted out there. So everybody come by the site and check it out, and you can also get directed over to Paz I Am as well.
And also, don't forget, guys, to comment and rate the show if you could tonight. I would appreciate it so much. Again, you can learn more about me and Jeremy both, actually, at the Paz I Am community, and you can join that also at www.paziam.com. It was very interesting. Little low-mooded show, but I think in the end we just want to let everybody know that we are all in this together, and that's what we're here for. I actually read this quote, and I kind of wanted to leave it off with this thought of everyone. So everyone, please come back next week, and Jeremy, you have a great night. It's going to end off with this quote, and then that'll be it. The quote is, "Death is not the greatest loss in life. The greatest loss is what dies inside of us while we live." Isn't that so true?
It is.
You have yourself a good night.
You too. Have a great
evening.
Bye, guys. Okay, bye.